The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war claims more Palestinian civilian lives in Gaza. The death toll tops 20,300, most of them women and children. Pressure is mounting on Israel's Netanyahu as more of his troops and captives are killed in the wake of indiscriminate bombings of Gaza. And over the Christmas weekend, more people demand an immediate ceasefire to stop the U.S.-Israeli genocide against Palestinians. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Israel keeps pounding the besieged Gaza Strip, where every new airstrike and shelling further exacerbates the humanitarian situation. According to officials, more than 200 people were killed in the past day. The latest attacks targeted the southern city of Khan Yunis and the northern city of Jabalia. The genocidal war in Gaza is now on its 79th day. Death toll is standing at more than 20,400. More than 54,000 people have been injured. The majority of victims are women and children. Those who have survived the war are living in dire conditions. The World Health Organization has a renewed warning that famine is looming in the Palestinian territory. There has been a mass burial for the Palestinians killed during Israeli strikes in the city of Jabalia, north of Gaza City. After regime troops withdrew, rescuers recovered the dead bodies and buried them in an improvised cemetery. The Palestinian Health Ministry says that dozens of Palestinians were killed this week and some publicly executed during an Israeli military offensive. The Israeli aerial and tank bombardment of Jabalia left dozens of people dead or wounded. The health facilities in the Gaza Strip strive to cope with the overwhelming tallies of Palestinian injuries as Israel's unabated air raids go on. Our Gaza correspondent has more.
The indiscriminate shelling that has been pounding all areas of Gaza Strip has resulted in paralysis of the health sector and the coastal territory. The already collapsed health sector in Gaza has pushed the wounded people to undergo operations in their injured limbs without anesthesia. In the meantime, the suffering of people with dialysis has aggravated incrementally as the instruments and medical appliances became completely overwhelmed with the doubled number of patients.
The situation is so dire and difficult. We lack all basic medical needs over the continuous Israeli airstrikes. We receive thousands of the injured people with difficult injuries and burns. Even the patients of the chronic diseases are suffering. We don't have enough medical staff. We don't have enough beds. Many injured people were treated on the floor without anesthesia. Many injured people had their limbs amputated over the lack of medical necessities.
Another aspect of this prolonged onslaught is unfolding with the intake of contaminated water and malnutrition. Children are suffering from a wide scale of intestinal diseases as a result of having no access to the basic humanitarian necessities.
Gaza's health sector was suffering even before the aggression due to the suffocating siege. However, with this unprecedented aggression, the suffering exacerbated, particularly the need to medicine and cure of the sick people. There is a severe shortage of the needed medical supplies and needs, particularly those needed for the dialysis department. On the other hand, we received many cases of children diagnosed with intestinal diseases because of the contaminated water and malnutrition.
For the people here, it takes standing in long lines in the front of the pharmacy, waiting to get the medicine needed for any illness. Often it's unavailable because of the overuse of all kinds of medicine.
My child is 1 year old. He's sick. He was infected with stomach flu and he has chronic convulsions. He was lying in the Nasser hospital in Gaza when the Israeli forces attacked it. I attempted to bring the medicine with me when I came to the middle area, but the Israeli soldiers on the checkpoint ordered me to drop it. For days, I've been trying to get the medicine, but I couldn't. Every time they tell me it's unavailable, I don't know what to do.
As we have just seen, these are some details of the continuous and extended
disaster that the Palestinian people are living and experiencing these moments in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital as a place taking shelter by the Palestinian people. It's clear that the people here are trapped between the rock of the continuous airstrikes and the hard place of the deteriorating humanitarian conditions in Gaza Strip. Jabal Musabbih, the middle area of Gaza Strip.
Now, Christians in the Palestinian city of Bethlehem have canceled their Christmas celebrations over the Israeli genocide in Gaza. They've gathered in one of the city's major squares to raise the Palestinian flag. We're joined by Mazen Gamsiyah earlier. He's a Palestinian scientist and author from Bethlehem. Let's listen to his take.
This year, unfortunately, there will not be celebration, so to speak. There will be the usual religious ceremonies. We still, kind of commemorate and consider this an important season for Jesus had been born. But we will not have celebrations. There's no Christmas tree in Nativity Square. There's no lights or decorations. There's only mourning for the death. For the martyred people of Gaza, 23,000 so far, and the numbers keep going up. A genocide that's sponsored by the United States. And so we also speak to the international community to tell them to stop this genocide. This is a season of hope. We are still hopeful. I think the Zionist movement is losing, and their genocide of the civilians is compensating for its losses, for its attempt to bury the Palestinian cause over 75 years, have come to a dead end, basically. And so we are still hopeful. We still pray for peace. We still hope that there will be an end of this genocide, that the massacres that are being committed, the starvation, lack of water, lack of medicine, the spreading of diseases that are now affecting 500,000 people in Gaza.
The Israeli military has released the names of 8 soldiers killed in fresh fighting with Palestinian resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip. They were killed in southern or central Gaza on Saturday. Tel Aviv says 158 Israeli troops have been killed since the beginning of the ground invasion of Gaza in October. Hamas's movement, however, says the actual number is much higher, and it also reports daily heavy blows to the regime's military. Israel had set out several objectives in launching its onslaught on Gaza, including dismantling Hamas militarily and releasing the captives, but none of those goals have been achieved. Thousands of Israelis have once again held rallies against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for his failure to secure the release of the captives in Gaza.
To make sure that Benjamin Netanyahu will go away. He makes more harm than good, and he betrayed the people. The absolutely traitor. So we want him to go. We've been protesting for a year now, and it's just getting worse. So it needs to be now.
Now, the rallies are angry at Netanyahu's handling of the case. They want to exert more pressure on the cabinet to bring the captives back. The new protest came days after the Israeli military mistakenly killed 3 captives in Gaza. Several have also been killed by the regime's air raids. Hamas's movement said on Saturday that 5 more captives might have been killed in the attacks. According to Israeli officials, 129 people are still being held by Hamas. Last month, more than 100 captives were released during a brief truce. Protests against Israel genocide in Gaza have been going on in the U.S. during the Christmas holiday weekend.
Say it loud!
Say it loud!
Let's say you make us proud.
Now, protesters in New York City said there should be no business and Christmas as usual while the genocide is taking place in the Palestinian land. They call on people to join the boycott and sanctions movement to demand an end to U.S. support for Israel. That was one of several demonstrations across the U.S. on one of the busiest shopping days of the year. Hundreds of protesters also filled the streets of the Italian city Milan, expressing solidarity with Palestine. They too called for boycotting Israel and saving Gaza. Since the beginning of the U.S.-Israeli genocide, mass rallies have regularly been held across the world to stop the onslaught. A new rally in support of Palestine has been held in Sydney ahead of Christmas festivities. A thousand people gathered in the city center, demanding an end to Israel's atrocities in Gaza.
On Saturday, about 2,000 people joined the protest in solidarity with besieged Palestinians in Sydney's iconic Hyde Park. The initiative, dubbed Stop the Genocide in Gaza, was organized by the Palestine Action Group, a Sydney-based activist formation committed to supporting Palestine and opposing the Israeli apartheid. Pro-Palestine rallies have been held weekly across all major Australian cities over the past 2.5 months. On its Facebook page, the Palestine Action Group presented Saturday's rally in Sydney by saying that Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza continues with the complicity of the world's governments, especially the US and including Australia.
We don't hear enough about the non-stop killings, the atrocities that are happening in Gaza. And meanwhile, mainstream countries like the USA stand by and continue to support Israel, continuing on its line that it's using. I disagree with all of that, and I'm going to find it very hard to ever forgive America for backing Israel and what it's doing, but delaying the ceasefire.
During Saturday's rally in Sydney, which occurred a day earlier than usual, with organizers wanting to maximize numbers ahead of Christmas, protesters chanted slogans against the apartheid Israeli regime in Gaza and in the West Bank, calling for Australia to cut ties with Tel Aviv.
Earlier this week, more than 50 former and current lawmakers from the Labour Party, the ruling force at the national level in Australia, broke ranks calling for a rethink on policy towards Israel. The Australian political figures signed a letter condemning Israel's domination of Palestine and demanding Canberra recognize Palestine as a state.
I think there is a lot of people who are good people, who want to support humanity, who want to support a stop, a permanent ceasefire. I think they are scared, but I do believe we're seeing small shifts, and those people who are not too concerned about others going to climb the hierarchy of politics, I think they're coming up and standing up against humanity.
On Saturday, a rally in support of Palestinians was also organized at Melbourne's State Library. Max Civili, Sydney.
The UN's Hunger Monitoring System has issued a report painting a harrowing picture of hunger in Gaza. The Integrated Food Security Phase classification says that people in Gaza are facing the highest level of food insecurity and hunger that it has ever recorded globally. Now, the World Food Program says that a report confirms the devastating situation in Gaza and has warned of a looming famine.
Hunger has become the most pressing of the myriad problems facing hundreds of thousands of displaced Gaza Palestinians, with aid trucks able to bring in only a small fraction of what is needed, and distribution uneven due to the chaos of the war. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based rights group, has found that 71% of people in the Gaza Strip suffer from extreme hunger due to Israel's devastating war on the Palestinian territory and the regime's method of using starvation as a weapon. The group released the figure after it conducted an analytical study of a sample of 1,200 people in Gaza. According to the study's findings, 98% of respondents said that they eat insufficient amounts of food, while 64% of the participants admitted to eating grass, immature food, and expired materials to satiate their hunger.
Pretty much all 2.2 million people are hungry, meaning that they are in crisis or worse food security situation.
More than 130,000 of Gaza's most vulnerable children, that is newborns up to 2 years of age, are not receiving the critical life-saving breastfeeding or age-appropriate complementary feeding that they absolutely require. So that's our scenario. Without sufficient safe water, food and sanitation that only a humanitarian ceasefire would bring, child deaths due to disease could well surpass those already killed in bombardments.
The study found that the rate of access to water in the Gaza Strip, including drinking, bathing and cleaning water, is 1.5 liters per person per day. This is 15 liters less than the minimum amount of water required for survival at the level required by international standards. Additionally, the study examined the effects of malnutrition and a lack of access to clean drinking water. 66% of the study sample reported having experienced diarrhea, skin rashes, or intestinal diseases in the past month. Even in Rafah, which has a crossing to Egypt through which aid trucks enter, the dearth of food and clean water is so severe, it is causing people to get ill.
The contaminated water is another issue, as the water is not 100% clean, so children and adults suffer from intestinal problems such as vomiting and diarrhea. So I ran out of antidiarrheal medications, flagyl medicines, which is an intestinal disinfectant, and silabrin, which is antibiotics for intestinal infections. There's a significant loss of these drugs.
The United Nations says that Ansar Allah movement and the Saudi-backed fugitive government of Yemen have agreed to a new ceasefire as part of a peace initiative to end the nine-year war in the country. The UN Special Envoy for Yemen said the agreement came after a meeting between representatives of the warring parties in Saudi Arabia. Hans Grunberg welcomed the development and said it sets the stage for an inclusive political process to end the war. The UN brokered ceasefire first took effect in April last year. The deal, which expired in October, has significantly reduced hostilities in Yemen. The country was invaded by the Saudi-led coalition in March 2015. The war has killed hundreds of thousands of people and pushed Yemen into one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. And that brings us to the end of this newscast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Tell about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, December 24th, 2023. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is a program which is broadcast on Sundays. And this is a program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, December 4th. And, of course, we've received reception reports from you, dear listeners, from Bala Morali from India, from Nico Genovese from Italy, and from Dario Gabrielli from Italy. So, Bala Morali, Nico Genovese, and Dario Gabrielli, many thanks for sending these reception reports. And as you may know, these reception reports are very helpful for us at IRIB English Radio because, as you may know, these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service for our listeners around the world. So, all of you who have sent in reception reports will be receiving an electronic QSL or EQSL from us. And thank you for those of you who have kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world. Misha, I mentioned some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. So, Robens, Frats, Petroso from Brazil, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email from Bangladesh. We've received an email from Mahfuzur Rahman, one of our old and regular listeners. Siddhartha Bhattacharya from India has sent us a piece of writing. Maurizio Vecchi from Italy has sent us a piece of email. And the last but not the least is an email from Bangladesh from Ali Hassan. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. Robens Frass Pedroso from Brazil has said, "Hello, my dear friends. I hope you are doing well. I'm sending you more reception reports from Brazil. I would like to receive your station's QSL card if possible. All the best wishes for all." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Robens Frass Pedroso from Brazil. We also hope you're doing well. Appreciations to you for writing to us at IRIB English Radio. Robens, your views about our programs are widely welcomed. So, please let us know what you think about our programs. Let us know which program or programs you like the best. An electronic QSL will be sent to you soon as a confirmation to this email. We also wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And let's see what Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh says. Mahfuzur Rahman says, "Greetings from Bangladesh. Hopefully you're safe and doing well. I am also fine by the grace of Almighty Allah. I have a request to you. Please send me an updated broadcast frequency chart as well as some souvenir of IRIB English service. Thank you." Salam from Iran. Greetings to you and thank you very much for writing to us, Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh. So please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation through this email. And we would be very glad to hear your views about our broadcast in your future emails. Wish you luck, Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh. and if you are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with you with an email from Siddhartha Bhattacharya from India. So here, let's see what Siddhartha Bhattacharya, one of our old and regular listeners from India, says. Siddhartha says, here I submit audio file of your broadcast. Hope it will be a great help for you and your technicians. Kindly send me your program schedule, secure stamps, and other promotional material, which is available in order to represent your radio here in India. Salam and warm greetings to you, Siddhartha Bhattacharya from India. Warm gratitude to you for writing to us. Of course, sending the materials like audio file of our broadcast would be a great help for us and our technicians. You know, it develops the quality of our programs. So please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. And please let us know your views about our programs in your upcoming emails or letters. Please let us know which program or programs you like the best. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. From Italy, we've received an email from Maurizio Vecchi. Of course, one of our regular listeners. Maurizio says, dear friends of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, here is my report on reception of your station. I would appreciate if you can check out your station log. If my report is correct, I would be grateful to receive in return your station QSL card with the time, date, frequency of this report mentioned on it. Thank you for taking time to read my email from Italy. Salam and greetings from Tehran. And many thanks for writing to us, Maurizio Vecchi from Italy. We are so grateful to you for this email. And your views about our programs are welcomed. Write to us soon, please. And let us know what you think about our programs. Take care, God bless you, and please accept our electronic QSL as verification to this email. Maurizio Vecchi from Italy. So after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Ali Hassan from Bangladesh has written after a long time. Ali Hassan says, after a long time, I started listening to your station again. Now I am one of your regular listeners. I love to listen to radio programs. Please send me your program's schedule. Radio listening and collecting postcards are my favorite hobbies. Thanks. Salam and warm greetings to you from Iran. Ali Hassan from Bangladesh. And it's good to hear from you again. We hope you're doing fine. So be our regular listeners and write to us regularly. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you. And your views about our programs are always welcomed. An electronic QSL will be sent to you very soon. Ali Hassan from Bangladesh, many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. And here we have to wrap up this edition of Listeners Special. But before saying goodbye, I do send my warm appreciations to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports, as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Barla Morali from India, Nico Genovis from Italy, Dario Gabrielli from Italy, Robens Faraz Pedroso from Brazil, Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh, Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, Maurizio Vecchi from Italy, and Ali Hassan from Bangladesh. Please keep in touch with us at IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special Program. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, fulfilling promises to others. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The fulfillment of promise is a virtue which Islam recommends. The promise, or the breaking of promise rather, is a vice which it prohibits. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Holy Quran says, O you who believe, why you say that which you do not do? It is most hateful to Allah that you should say that which you do not do. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is asking a direct question. Why you say that which you do not do? In a way, Allah seems to be saying that why are you being a hypocrite? Why are you being two-faced? Why is it that you say one thing and do another thing? If one says that they would do something, let's say, you know, one says that I will, for instance, do this task A, they must perform it. If they don't intend on doing that, they should not say it either, right? Unfortunately, we live in a type of society where people, out of boasting, say a lot of things that they don't intend on doing to begin with, and they don't end up doing it either. And this is something that is considered to be not fulfilling the promises to others. So sometimes people make, you know, these commitments with others, and they do not fulfill those commitments. And worst thing is, like, they don't even intend to fulfill those commitments. Islam says that if you make a commitment, if you say something to someone, if you, you know, make a claim of doing something, then you better do it. If you don't intend on doing something, then don't even say it. And this is the basic principle that Islam is teaching us. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing fulfilling promises to others. And we said that Islam lays a great deal of importance on the topic of fulfilling promises towards others. If we do not intend to do something, we should not promise anyone. We should not make a commitment with anyone. Fulfilling promises is very much emphasized in Islam. Just remember that. The seerah and the method of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam is that every time they made a commitment, they made a promise, they gave their word to anyone, they made sure that they fulfill it. The Holy Prophet of Allah, he said, "He who believes in Allah and the Day of Judgment must fulfill his promises." It appears to be a condition and a prerequisite for being a believer, right? Because if you notice, the Prophet of Allah is saying, "He who believes in Allah and the Day of Judgment, they must fulfill their promises." So there's a direct correlation and connection between the two. The Prophet of Allah also said, "He who has three things should be counted as hypocrite, even if he performs the daily prayers and observes fasting and thinks that he's a Muslim." What are those three things? Number one, breach of trust. Number two, lying. Number three, breach of promise. These three traits, if they are found in anyone, doesn't matter how good of a person they are, how, you know, funny they are, how social they are, how much they help others, it doesn't matter. If these three traits exist in a person, then chances are high that they're hypocrites, as per the statement of the Prophet of Allah. Again, what are those three things? Number one, breach of trust. Number two, lying. And number three, breach of promise. So fulfilling promises to others is an obligation on every Muslim.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The Irish government is to challenge the United Kingdom in the European Court of Human Rights over its controversial legislation to deal with a legacy of troubles in Northern Ireland. We take a look at the Irish and British media's coverage of this story. Irish Times has covered this story and tells us more. The Irish government is to challenge the United Kingdom in the European Court of Human Rights over its controversial legislation to deal with the legacy of Northern Ireland's troubles. The Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, said it had been left with no option but to take an interstate case, and the strong legal advice was that the Legacy Act breached the United Nations Convention on Human Rights. Announcing the move on Wednesday, 20th of December, the Taoiseach Michael Martin said the decision had been taken after much thought and careful consideration. "I regret that we find ourselves in a position where such a choice had to be made," he said, "but the only recourse is to pursue a legal path." The Irish government will argue the provisions of the Northern Ireland Troubles Legacy and Reconciliation Act 2023 are incompatible with the United Kingdom's obligations under the European Convention of Human Rights. The Taoiseach Michael Martin said the government was particularly concerned about the provisions which allow for the granting of immunity and which shut down existing avenues to truth and justice for historic cases, including inquests, police investigations, police ombudsman investigations and civil actions. The British government was strongly critical of Dublin's decision, with the Northern Ireland Secretary Chris Heaton-Harris describing it as misguided and urging the Irish government to look to its own inconsistent record on addressing the legacy of the Northern Ireland Troubles, comments that were echoed by the Democratic Unionist Party and the Ulster Unionist Party. In a lengthy statement on Wednesday evening, 20th of December, Chris Heaton-Harris said the British government profoundly regrets the decision taken by the Irish government today to bring this unnecessary case against the United Kingdom. "This decision comes at a particularly sensitive time in Northern Ireland. It did not need to be taken now, given the issues are already before the UK courts of law." He said the British government remains confident the Legacy Act provides a robust and effective framework to discharge our legal obligations. The decision to challenge the legislation was widely welcomed by victims, survivors and campaigners and survivors in Northern Ireland. Emmett McConomy, whose 11-year-old brother Stephen was killed by a plastic bullet fired by a British soldier in Derry in 1982, said, "It was a good day for victims, but they should never have been here in the first place. What the British government has done is disastrous for victims and survivors." "It's heartwarming to know that the Irish government has taken this forward, but it shouldn't have to," he said. "What a Christmas gift from the Irish government to victims and survivors, hope and defence of their human rights," said Mark Thompson from Relatives for Justice. It was also welcomed by Sinn Féin and the SDLP. The Sinn Féin leader, Mary Lou MacDonald, said the shameful Legacy Act was a flagrant breach of international human rights law, and the interstate case would complement legal challenges taken by Irish families. The SDLP leader, Colm Eastwood, said it was both welcome and utterly necessary. Speaking to the BBC, Geoffrey Donaldson, the leader of the Democratic Unionist Party, accused the Irish government of double standards and said it could not point the finger at the British government because the Irish government has no proposals to deal with the legacy issues. The Legacy Act, which became law in September, replaced current methods of criminal and civil investigations and inquests with inquiries carried out by a new investigative body, the Independent Commission for Reconciliation and Information Recovery, the ICRIR, which has the power to offer conditional amnesties for perpetrators. The British government argues it will offer better outcomes for victims and survivors. A legal challenge to the Legacy Act taken by bereaved families was heard in the High Court in Belfast last month, and a judgment is awaited. Belfast solicitor Porig O'Murtagh, who represents some of those involved in the case, said on Wednesday that his office will submit applications to the European Court of Human Rights on behalf of families early in the new year. In a statement issued announcing the move, the Taoiseach, Michael Martin, said the decision by London not to proceed with the 2014 Stormont House Agreement and instead pursue legislation unilaterally without effective engagement with the legitimate concerns that we and many others raised left us with few options. He said the British government removed the political option and has left us only the legal avenue. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. Ireland is to sue Britain over its attempt to halt inquests, civil cases and criminal prosecutions for crimes during Northern Ireland's troubles. Leo Varadkar, the Irish Taoiseach, said on Wednesday, 20th of December, that Dublin would launch an interstate case against the United Kingdom's so-called legacy legislation under the European Convention on Human Rights. It is something that we're genuinely doing with a sense of regret and would prefer not to be in this position, but we did make a commitment to survivors in Northern Ireland and to the families of the victims that we would stand by them, the Taoiseach said. The Irish government would seek a judicial review on the basis of legal advice that the legislation breached the Convention on Human Rights, according to Leo Varadkar. The decision will dismay No. 10 Downing Street and give Conservatives another reason to chaff at the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, which has complicated Britain's effort to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. It may also undercut efforts by London and Dublin to repair a bilateral relationship frayed by Brexit. Chris Heaton-Harris, the Northern Ireland Secretary, issued a stinging riposte that accused Dublin of failing to investigate troubles-related crimes committed in the Irish Republic. Ireland's apparently victim-led approach was hard to reconcile with its own record, he said. At no time since the Good Friday Agreement in 1998 has there been any concerted or sustained attempt on the part of the Irish state to pursue a criminal investigation and prosecution-based approach to the past. The former Irish Justice Minister had previously admitted that Dublin did not want to investigate Northern Ireland Troubles cases, according to Chris Heaton-Harris. The Irish government should urgently clarify the number of criminal prosecutions brought in Ireland since 1998 relating to the Troubles cases. The Northern Ireland Secretary, Chris Heaton-Harris, called Dublin's legal action misguided and said it was considerable regret it had not accepted an investigation to engage with the nascent Independent Commission for Reconciliation and Information Recovery, the ICRIR. While this step is disappointing, it is one of which the British government was prepared, he said, we will continue robustly to defend the legislation. Meanwhile, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, the Democratic Unionist Party leader, said Ireland had granted de facto amnesty by not actively pursuing alleged perpetrators. Other political parties in Northern Ireland and victims' rights groups welcomed the decision on prosecution, saying it would give hope to families that sought justice for unsolved crimes. The Northern Ireland Troubles Legacy and Reconciliation Bill was introduced by Boris Johnson's administration in 2021 and became law last September. The government said it would draw a line under a conflict that killed more than 3,600 people from 1969 to 1998 and left thousands of cases unresolved. The legislation offers immunity to security forces veterans and former paramilitaries who cooperate with a new Commission for Reconciliation and Information Recovery. The Northern Ireland Secretary, Heaton Harris, said in September the legislation was a milestone that would help deliver better outcomes for those most affected by the troubles in Northern Ireland. Nationalists and unionists, however, said it would extinguish hopes for justice, and troubles victims groups mounted a legal challenge at the High Court in Belfast. Dublin notified the British government of its decision on Wednesday morning, 20th of December, before the Deputy Prime Minister and Irish Foreign Minister, Michael Martin, announced it publicly, saying the Irish government had a duty to protect the Good Friday Agreement. Michael Martin said, "I used every opportunity to make my concerns known and urged the British government to pause this legislation." The Council of Europe's Commissioner for Human Rights and the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights had also expressed concern, according to Michael Martin. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM, 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Send me your peace, or I am lost. follows for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and a very instructive and informative hadith, which has been transmitted from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. This hadith is a hadith in which one of the criteria by means of which we can ascertain and assess whether a certain hadith is true or fabricated has been presented to us. As you know, in the history of hadith, if you're acquainted with the history of hadith, you might know that there was, after the Holy Prophet, you know, came and he was delegated and sent on his mission and began teaching people the teachings of Islam. There was a certain number of people who emerged, and they were people who fabricated false hadiths, and they propagated them and amongst Muslims in the name of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And this has been affirmed and asserted by historians. One of the famous people who is known and well known to have done this is a person called Abu Huraira. And this was a person. He belonged to another faith. He was Jewish, and this person, he apparently, you know, he claimed to be Muslim. He claimed to accept Islam, and under the guise of being a Muslim, He began fabricating prophetic hadiths and ascribing them to the Holy Prophet, secretly putting in teachings of the Jewish faith within these hadiths. These became later known in the parlance of practitioners of hadiths. These hadiths are known as Israelites, Israeli hadiths, There's another person who did something similar. This person was named as Ka'abul Ahbar. Ka'abul Ahbar. He was also a person who was previously Jewish. He was a rabbi. He apparently claimed to convert to Islam, but again, he began fabricating hadith. So because of that, later on, it became very difficult to ascertain whether a hadith was true and really uttered by the Holy Prophet or not. So because of that, the imams of the family of the Holy Prophet, alayhi wasalam, they mentioned certain criteria by means of which we can ascertain whether a hadith is true or not. One of these criteria is the soundness of the tradition and its being in agreement with the Holy Quran. In this connection, the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, said the following: "Compare my tradition with the Book of Allah. If it corresponds with it, then it is from me. And I have indeed said it." Right, so conformity with the Holy Quran because we know that the Holy Quran, we know for sure that the Holy Quran is from God, and you know its meanings are clear and apparent, and you know, so therefore we can, you know, easily understand what it wants to say. We can use it as a criteria to ascertain whether a hadith is true or not. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the soundness of the tradition and hadith and its agreement with the Holy Quran in the words of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa sallam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr.